BBC World Service. If you want to understand the background to Nigeria's missing girls, you have to start with a story that at first overshadowed them. Last month, on Monday, April 14th.
Powerful bombs have exploded at a bus station on the outskirts of the Nigerian capital, Abuja, causing large numbers of casualties.
What we are seeing here is quite a horrific scene. People screaming in the background are terrified by what they just see. An ambulance load of human bodies is just being conveyed into the hospital. And what makes it more horrific is the fact that the bodies are mutilated.
More than 70 people were killed. But even as officials struggled to deal with it, a more audacious attack was underway. 800 kilometers to the northeast, a father's phone rang.
On 14th of April in the night, we received a phone from different friends living in Chibok town that Boko Haram has come to Chibok to attack a school and some part of the town.
There was every reason to believe an attack by the Islamist militants was imminent. In the preceding days, Boko Haram had been active near Chibok, a poor farming village of about 1,000 people. Schools are a frequent target for the group. Boko Haram translates as Western education is forbidden. It's seen as corrupting and un-Islamic. In February, Boko Haram murdered more than 50 boys at a school dormitory. On the night of April 14th, our parents had no doubt that Chibok was in danger.
We know definitely, we have fear that we will not escape their coming.
Police in Nigeria say there's been an attack on a girls' boarding school in Borno State in the northeast of the country. Parents say more than 200 girls were abducted.
The abduction occurred around midnight last night. One of the girls who managed to escape told the BBC they were sleeping when armed men, believed to be members of the Boko Haram sect, burst into their hostel.
We were writing our final exams when they attacked. We heard gunshots and we woke up, and three men came into our room and told us not to panic. We later found out that they were among the attackers.
Finding these missing girls has become a global cause. Presidents and prime ministers have joined parents in calling for their release. Nigeria's president, Goodluck Jonathan, has made a bold prediction about what it means for an insurgency that has been going on for 5 years and claimed more than 4,000 lives.
I believe that the kidnap of these girls will be the beginning of end of terror in Nigeria.
Not everyone is applauding the way he's handling things. As recently as last Friday, he said he's still not clear about what happened on the night of April 14th. I'm Nkem Ifejika, and I've been covering this story from my home country of Nigeria for the BBC World Service. In this program, we'll set out the chronology of events. We'll also ask what Boko Haram's apparent growing potency means for the government of Africa's most populous nation, newly crowned as the continent's biggest economy. Let's pick up the story in Chibok, the morning after the girls were taken. Yakubu Mkeki Minor had two teenage daughters at the school. He looked on its smoldering ruins and saw no soldiers or police to help. So Yakubu and a number of other distraught parents took matters into their own hands.
We pursued them up to 86 kilometers with only cutlass, bow and arrow. We meet one village man, a village head from a Damboa area called Bale. We park our motorcycle there. We asked him about why Boko Haram parked our daughter. He took us near by the forest. He told us that this forest, as you are looking at it, it is the place where your daughter are. But I am advising you, you will lose your life. Go and report to the government so that they will do something about it.
How did you feel to have to go back from there?
Yes. On the very day, there was heavy rain. We actually have to go back because we can't do anything to Boko Haram. And everybody start crying. What can we do?
It's not clear precisely how many Boko Haram were involved in the kidnapping, But all reports speak of convoys of motorcycles, pickup trucks and vans, and scores of young men with AK-47s, improvised explosive devices and petrol bombs. The army says it sent troops to fight them, but they had to travel 120 kilometers along what it called a rugged and tortuous road. Along the way, a number of these soldiers were ambushed and killed. Further reinforcements got lost. Ayuba Alamson is from Chibok and says through his extended family, he's probably related to 100 of the kidnapped girls.
The whole thing is, if government is really serious, they will have reacted. The number of soldiers, they are very few. They are small. Number two, sincerely speaking, they don't have enough weapon. If they have enough weapon, as government claimed, they will have combat those guys that confronted them that night in Chibok. Government is weak. There was no true prompt reaction by the government. That is why these girls were taken off.
But just how many had been taken? Initially, reports varied wildly.
Parents say more than 200 girls were abducted by the attackers.
More than 100 schoolgirls who were kidnapped.
Military spokesman said out of the 129 girls, just 8 were still reported as missing.
There's a lot of confusion among the people, Nigerian people.
I mean, surely if one asks the people in Borno, one would get a better idea. What are they saying in Chibok? Are they saying majority of their daughters that were at that government school are still missing?
I thought it was a joke.
Abike Dabiri Erewa is an MP with the recently formed opposition APC party coalition. She was in the National Assembly in Abuja in the days immediately following the kidnapping.
The numbers just kept changing. And then the next thing, there was a release from the military and from the presidential spokesman that the girls had been freed by the military. And we all jubilated. And then the next thing, to hear the parents come out and say, no, our children have not been freed. And that, to me, was demoralizing and confusing. I kept asking, why would the military give this wrong information? And we actually asked on the floor of the house, but they said no, there was a mix-up. So, and then confusion galore.
The precise number matters, of course. And the fact authorities had so much trouble for so long in pinning it down says a lot about the situation in Nigeria. But this isn't a story about numbers. Each one is a girl with a life, a family, a dream. Yakubu Mkeki Minor, who went chasing Boko Haram with a bow and arrow, has two daughters, Saratu and Hanatu. Saratu is competitive and would spend as much of her time studying as possible.
She is good in mathematics, chemistry, and biology.
And Hanatu, what is Hanatu's favorite subject?
Her favorite subject is integrated science, government, maths, and religion, that is Christian religion studies.
What do they want to do after school? What do they want to do after secondary school?
Saratu, she says she wants to become a doctor.
She wants to be a doctor to treat people?
Yes.
And what does Hanatu want to do?
Hanatu, she says she wants to read mass communication in order to become a journalist or so in that matter.
What do you do?
I'm a teacher, and their mother too is she's a teacher. We put hands together to see that they get better education, and also we farm beans, bambara nuts, and so that we sell in order to maintain the money for their schooling.
Parents willing to sacrifice, children eager to learn. Schools across their home state of Borno had been closed for weeks because of Boko Haram attacks. But the government girls' secondary school, Chibok, opened to students from across the state so they could take their final exams and go on to university. Hanatu and Saratu didn't hesitate to join them. It took a week for someone from the government to visit Chibok after the attack. They said it was too dangerous. MP Abike Dabiri Erewa.
The president actually went on a campaign rally in Kano.
Pictures of him and dancing.
And that to me showed irresponsibility, if I may say so. And it showed a lack of interest in the lives of innocent Nigerians.
To be fair, the president's campaign event was planned long in advance. And his aides argued that everything was being done behind the scenes to rescue the girls. But the surreal images of him dancing while the girls were in captivity set a tone. And nothing in the following days changed that. popular opinion was growing more angry by the day. Not just at Boko Haram for taking the girls in the first place, but for the government's apparent indifference. People vented online, on Facebook, on message boards, and on Twitter, the hashtag #BringBackOurGirls was born.
I can't describe how sad I am at the moment. If I had seen the corpse of my daughter, I would have been more at ease.
They don't really inform us what they're really doing, if they're really finding out what motivated them to commit such evil acts.
It's very clear that it's been poorly handled. We don't know what to trust, we don't know who to trust, we are at a loss.
Nigeria is a difficult place to protest. In the days before the first Bring Back Our Girls demonstrations, police tear gassed striking lecturers from polytechnics. By now, 2 weeks after the girls were taken, I attended a gathering at Abuja's Unity Fountain, a white Greco-Roman structure with the names of Nigeria's 36 states written in gold. Overlooking the park is the Transcorp Hilton Hotel, where the country's power brokers often stay. Blaring out of the loudspeakers is "Which Way Nigeria" by the late Sonny Okosun. It's a soul-searching song which asks what direction the country is going, towards success or failure.
People are gathering here. It's relatively festive. There are women carrying banners saying the girls are innocent. If one of us is unsafe, none of us are safe. There are youths around, people wearing red, people in traditional Nigerian attire, are starting to gather for a protest to send a message that something needs to be done to bring back the girls to their homes.
As the march began towards the National House of Assembly, I saw an officious-looking policeman surrounded by officers carrying automatic weapons, wearing helmets and bulletproof vests, somewhat at odds with the peaceful protesters. He turned out to be Mbu Joseph Mbu, Commissioner of Police for the Federal Capital Territory, Abuja.
Over the past 16 days, it has felt like silence from the government.
No, it's not. It's not. The government is not silent. The government is doing something. But the press keeps speculating. They keep telling people stories, oh, this has happened, trying to run down the military.
But I work for the BBC. I have tried repeatedly for the past 2 weeks to reach members of government to let us know what is happening, even if not necessarily giving out operational details, just a bit of reassurance. And that has not been forthcoming.
It has been forthcoming.
Earlier, I had met Mary Bata and Seratu Angus, two women from Chibok whose relatives were among the missing girls. These were women in mourning, wearing black. They'd been in touch with family back home, who said the girls were being held in the Sambisa Forest, a nature reserve in the far northeast, twice the size of Belgium.
We've been waiting for the government to do something. We have not had anything. We couldn't wait any longer. We wanted something to be done.
There are lots of stories, and we don't know whom to believe. And we think we have a father of this nation.
Yeah.
He's supposed to speak.
We also expect his wife, our mother of the nation, to also speak, at least to say something, to make us believe that the government is doing something tangible to search for this, our girls.
One of the things which I found curious is that it just, how does anyone know what is going on?
That is it. We are equally at a loss. We don't know what is going on. The so-called Zambisa Forest used to be a game reserve. The Ministry of Agriculture.
Zambisa Forest.
That's why they're apparently being held. Yes. So it's not a hidden place. We know it. People know it. It's part of this estate. It's not as if it's an island somewhere that nobody knows. But who has gone there? What has happened? How many soldiers have gone there? Because I know in some countries, if one child gets missing, we see the news on CNN, we see the news on BBC, we see the news on Al Jazeera, that they are following up to rescue such. These are over 200. You can imagine two number, 200. It's not small. It's not small. They can't just be hiding somewhere.
And what have your friends and families from back home been telling you? How are they coping? What are they doing?
It's terrible. You sleepless night.
And they will cry. They will cry and go back home. They will gather in the city and cry and go back home.
What the government seemed to be treating as a little local difficulty had now become an international embarrassment which couldn't be ignored. 10 days after the girls were taken, the Nigerian Defense Minister spoke for the first time.
The federal government will do everything in its power to bring this unfortunate security situation under control.
A week later, it was the Interior Minister's turn.
The insurgents are threatened that if certain steps were taken, that they are going to kill these girls.
And finally, 3 weeks after the girls had been taken, President Goodluck Jonathan stepped to the microphone for the first time.
Wherever these girls are, we'll surely get them out. One good thing is that there's no story that any of them has been hurt in terms of injured or dead.
During those 3 weeks of presidential silence, Boko Haram struck again. And astonishingly, they hit Nyanya just outside Abuja, just meters from the attack we heard about at the start of this program. As the cleanup got underway, Mbu Joseph Mbu came round, along with his armed bodyguards. "You again," he said when he saw me.
Are Nigerians safe?
Nigerians are safe.
But the people of Nyanya will say, for something like this to happen twice within 3 weeks, that cannot be safe.
Yes, I know it has happened. We are not spirits. We are working on information. Look, even in Britain, you are aware of the crisis they had. You know, it takes time. It's a terrorist activity, and it's not something that can be clamped down in just one day.
It didn't stop there. Within a few days, Boko Haram kidnapped 8 more girls in another town in northern Nigeria. But what really got everyone's attention was this.
Kana daiva.
This frankly bizarre video shows a wild-eyed man in fatigues, flanked by armed men in masks, standing in front of armored personnel carriers. He rants on and on, sometimes laughing, sometimes haranguing, for almost an hour. In his left hand are several pages of script, which he sometimes pauses to read. His right hand shakes and gestures wildly.
Ni kuma zance, I pledge to Allah, my God, to be faithful.
The man is Abubakar Shekau, the leader of Boko Haram. The Nigerian military had claimed they killed him last year. Shekau says he's taken the girls from Chibok and that the Quran permits him to sell them into slavery. The video horrifies relatives. The brother of one of the girls, Ayuba Alamson, says if he wasn't a Christian, he would have killed himself.
This is a person that believes in destruction of life. When I heard that he is behind the adoption and then he's going to sell this girl out, I know the kind of person he is. I become devastated. I become terrified. In fact, I am a hypertensive person. I have to rush to chemist to get some first aid, else I nearly develop a kind of stroke.
The Boko Haram video prompted an even greater outrage around the world. Among those raising their voices was Malala Yousafzai, the Pakistani schoolgirl who had herself been a victim of militant Islamists.
The international community should think about these girls, because this is the part of our community. And if we forget these girls, it means like we are forgetting our own sister, our own people.
And on May 6th, we heard from both Hollywood and Washington, the president of the world's most powerful nation and the actress and activist Angelina Jolie.
If the world does nothing, then they get away with this, then we set this horrible precedent. So I think it's extremely important that something is done immediately to try to find these girls, to try to bring them home. And God forbid we can't. We have to still bring these men to justice.
Obviously, it's a heartbreaking situation. This may be the event that helps to mobilize the entire international community to finally do something against this horrendous organization that's perpetrated such a terrible crime.
At the same time world leaders were saying things like this, President Jonathan was getting ready to host them.
let me use this unique opportunity to welcome you all to Abuja for this gathering of the World Economic Forum. Let me really especially thank all of you.
He thanked them for their offers of help in finding the girls.
Crisis in Nigeria. I believe that the kidnap of these girls will be the beginning of end of terror in Nigeria.
The diplomatic language was reserved for the international forum. But speaking to the BBC, the president's spokesman, Dr. Donyi Okukpe, was more confrontational.
People are saying that, you know, we haven't done anything about it. It's just because we are not dramatic about it. We are not making a noise about it. The government does not advertise. This is not a football match where you get commentaries on day-to-day basis. We must change the narratives. It's no longer whether Nigerian government is doing anything or is not doing anything. I mean, France, United States, UK, Canada, and China have already offered help. They have been accepted. It's a global matter now.
All right.
Countries in the world are now working on this. So let's change the whole narrative.
Perhaps the narrative has already changed. Abike Dabiri-Erewa from the opposition party believes the events of the last 4 weeks have had a profound effect on Nigeria and its politics.
What happened in the last 1 month has never happened before in Nigeria. You know, what happened just took a life of its own. So this is a very, very positive development for Nigeria. What I hope is that, one, these girls will be brought back. Secondly, is that we shouldn't stop. We shouldn't stop at demanding for government to do the right things. If this had not taken the dimension it took, maybe these girls would just be history. So it's a positive development for my country, Nigeria, where people just sit back and accept everything. Things are not right. We're not getting leadership right in Nigeria. Let's get out of denial. Let's us tackle these problems head on in the first place. You see, we'll be deceiving ourselves if we say it's okay when it's not okay. So this is the beginning, I hope, of demanding your right from government.
This is the first we've heard of the girls since they were kidnapped. It is another Boko Haram video released on Monday. It shows about 130 girls in full veils singing Quranic verses. Abubakar Shekau offers to release some of them in exchange for Boko Haram members held in prisons. The government says it's willing to talk and has called on them to set up a meeting. But that's a long way from a settlement. For a glimpse of how negotiations might work, I spoke to Shehu Sani. He's one of the few people to have negotiated with Boko Haram. He sat in the same room as them in the second half of 2011.
Well, to negotiate with such a secretive and violent organization is an exercise that is full of risk and also an exercise that is full of danger. I went there with an open mind that we could be killed while talking to them, and we could come back home. And luckily, after the talks, we went back home.
What did they want? What were their conditions?
Well, they have raised a number of issues, but in most cases, what they consistently emphasize is the release of their members in detention and an end to the arrest of their wives and children who are not members of their group. And they also made it very clear that as long as civilians continue to cooperate with the military, civilians will also be targets. And they also made it clear that the demolition of their schools, their homes and their mosques by the security forces is something which must also stop.
Do you think the past few weeks has changed the dynamics of the conflict between the government and Boko Haram?
The campaign in social media and also the interest shown by world leaders, this has seriously put pressure on the Nigerian government to really act. The world is watching and the world is monitoring. It is a good thing, and that Nigerian government knew very well that there is no hidden place and that this issue must be resolved once and for all.
In Chibok, nothing is resolved. Parents are desperate for good news, but also terrified of further attacks. One man we spoke to there said if a tire pops or an engine backfires, people run to the bush for cover. Yakubu Mkeki Minor is the father of Seratu and Hanatu.
Boko Haram, there are people like us. Some are living with us.
Boko Haram has infiltrated your community?
Seriously. Some of them, they were still around in the area.
So what do people like him or Ayuba Alamson, whose relatives are still being held, want the government to do about Boko Haram? Should they talk or fight?
Really not fighting. Try to brainwash these guys because they are sophisticated. They are almost on air. They are listening to radio. They are browsing. They are on net. Even while they have some good gadget in the bush, they are listening. So if the whole world will come together diplomatically, I believe is another way. If that would not work, then maybe.
It's been a month since the girls were taken, and a year since President Jonathan declared a state of emergency in three regions in northeastern Nigeria. He's asked Parliament to extend it another 6 months. Meanwhile, the world is waiting to see whether these girls can be rescued, either through talks or force. The Missing Girls was presented by me, Nkem Ifejika. The producer was Neil Razel.